Today's program was brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm in Vermont, a producer of award-winning handmade cheese from goat and cow milk. For more information, visit ConsiderBardwellFarm.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. This is episode 51. I am broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Right at the top of the show, we are going to introduce our very special guest. He has a tight schedule, and I want to make sure we get him on air. It is Fabio Viviani, the fan favorite of Top Chef, who is here to talk to me about food and his wonderful new projects. Hi, Fabio.
Hey, hello there. How are you guys?
We are great. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for having me on. Sorry, I'm always running tight.
No, that's okay. So tell me, what time do you have to be off the phone just so that I get everything out of you that I need?
As soon as we can. Let's put it this way.
Okay. Where are you off to?
I am actually about, I was supposed to walk in a meeting at 1 o'clock my time, which is in 2.5 minutes, but we have some time for the interview, and then after I'm off to Canada, so... Really running a tight ship here.
So you are an avid restaurateur, someone who is familiar with running a tight ship. What are some of the things that you are working on that you want fans to know about?
Well, you know, there is a new cookbook coming out on October 21st, Fabio's American Home Kitchen. We're going to be the Central Coast will come up this weekend, as well as we have a new restaurant opening in Miami. As soon as I get there, they're waiting for me for the opening.
How do you keep all of these balls in the air? You have an incredible amount of stuff going on. What's your secret to keeping it all straight?
I have a very good assistant. I guess that's my secret. They tell me what to do all day. That's all I do. I just say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, all day long.
I think everyone would benefit from an assistant. So tell me about what you're doing with Savor the Central Coast.
Well, what we're going to do there, we're going to do some demos, book sign, entertain, explain a few good recipes. It's a good occasion to get everybody together. It's a beautiful area, beautiful time of the year to do it. And it's just going to be a blast. And then I hope to see you all guys there. I really do.
And I had Tanya Holland on last week, who was wonderful. And she's also going to be there doing demos and book signings as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so people can get information on SavorCentralCoast.com. I'm looking at the website right now. Your face is prominently featured.
I like that. You guys have been good to me. So I promise you we will bring the heat.
Okay.
We're taking the house down.
I'm wishing for a time-space portal that I can step through and come from New York to be there, but I'm not sure it's going to happen. I know your schedule is tight, so I'm going to let you go and say thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot. And
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll talk soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for your time. Thank you very much. I'll see you all there.
Okay.
Don't miss it.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sharp and Hot. That was a whirlwind interview. There was some confusion. I haven't learned what it was because I was told he had less than 7 minutes and it was going to happen before 2 o'clock. So that was Fabio. You probably know him from Top Chef and the Food Network and multiple TV appearances. I see him all over the place, and when I do, I think to myself, how does that guy do it? How does that guy get booked in all of these different places? And I think his energy level is reflected, for one thing, and also that he has excellent people who tell him where to go and what to do, and he shows up and does it. So that was that whirlwind. Coming up a little bit later in the show, we are going to have I keep saying we. Jack, I assume that's because I think I'm talking to you. I am alone in the studio, the royal
I'm
we.
Here.
You're here too. Okay. Maybe it's a sign that I should bring on a sidekick for an episode or two. I am going to have on a casting director who will be in New York City casting for MasterChef. So if you are someone who is an avid home cook who wants to compete on Gordon Ramsay's cooking competition show, she's going to give you all of the details on how to get to the casting call that is coming up in the New York area. But I will tell you first that my husband and I bought our new car. It's not new to us. I mentioned last week we purchased a used Honda Pilot, a 2011. It has almost 40,000 miles on it. And it's the most luxurious car that I don't think I ever imagined that I would own a car as large or as appointed as I do. And I think it's giving me a little bit of an existential crisis. I was talking to my very, very good long-term friend and deputy director of the station, Allison Hamlin, before we came on air, and she and I were comparing notes on how I think it's the change of seasons, and it's particularly pronounced between the end of summer and the beginning of fall that I have like the seasonal blues, probably because I can like identify the passage of time, and that makes me sad a little bit. And so now I also have this car, which is a symbol of my adulthood. And not that there is anything that in my life that I have to complain about. I have everything I could possibly want. But I do have this like seasonal sigh, like, oh, the trees are changing and I can't make that. I can't go back and have one more beach day because it's just too cold. So I'm wondering if anybody else shares that. I had a friend back when I lived in Brooklyn full time when I was young and beautiful named Alex Battles. And he, I think, called it he had a name for it and I can't remember what it was. It was like I think he called it his transitional sadness, something like that. And it's, you know, it's silly because I love the fall. I love turning on the oven. I love braising things. I love, pumpkins and squash and Brussels sprouts and all those things that you can't have. But it is a moment to sort of reflect on the passage of time. And I think my chickens are the most happy because they're about to be set free in our vegetable garden, which was of mixed success this year. We had such a cool summer that the tomatoes had a hard time ripening, the Swiss chard, the rainbow chard had a hard time ripening, but we got excellent herbs. We got some cucumbers, we got some peppers, I think I have like one sole cantaloupe out there, but it was a severely neglected garden this year because I've just been, you know, busy and raising a kid and doing all this other stuff. And my husband has been walking through the room. Well, he walked through the room last night and he looked at me and he said, "You have a lot of balls in the air." I was like, "I know." So maybe I need to take Fabio's advice and get an assistant. If anyone out there wants to be my assistant, I can pay you in whatever you can harvest out of my garden and goodwill. And I will be very appreciative of your time and energy helping me organize my life. But that being said, there are some listener questions that I've been asked recently. As I mentioned, I am still taking questions. If you want to record them, go to sharpenhot.com. You'll see the phone number there. You can call in and leave a voicemail on the line that we will play on the air, and I will give you a nice, thoughtful response. And I will also take them via Twitter at Chef Emily P or Facebook /sharpenhot. If you have cooking questions that you're like, oh, yeah, why does that happen? So one of them was that I was at yoga the other day because I try to go to yoga two or three times a week realistically, especially now that the semester is in full swing and I am teaching several credits at two universities in the New York City area. But my yoga instructor asks me cooking questions all of the time, and I ask him yoga questions, and he doesn't always have the most satisfying answers. Like, I asked him if there was anything I could do for my shins because I've been running, and he said, "Downward facing dog." I was like, I tried that one. But he asked me, and I actually followed up this question with Dave Arnold, who hosts the show that comes a little bit before mine, because he is the science expert. He asked me if one could consider cured salmon a low-sodium food because he follows a low-sodium diet. He's particular about the things that he eats, my yoga instructor, not Dave Arnold. And so he was talking to me about curing salmon and whether or not by drawing out the water, it somehow could still be considered a low sodium food. And my initial reaction was correct after I clarified with, actually I should say both Dave and Erica Wide, who hosts Let's Get Real. We were all standing on the sidewalk out front of Roberta's talking this over because we are food geeks. And what happens, in fact, is that the salt takes the place of the water in the salmon itself. And so if you have a salmon fillet and you pack it in salt, which is a very, very old preservation method for holding fish for longer periods of time than you normally would be able to without the aid of electric refrigeration, the salt takes the place in the molecular structure of some of the water. So some of the water is drawn out, the salt goes into the molecular structure of the fish, and therefore you are in fact eating salt. And so what I was trying to get out of him, which was again not a satisfying answer, and maybe that's just his thing, is why he's on a low sodium diet at all. And he said that he just doesn't want to eat a lot of salt. And so that gets me thinking about people's food hangups and why it is that we make decisions about the things that we eat and the things that we don't eat. The things that I don't eat are very, very rare. I don't eat eel because I was traumatized as a child by my father's commercial fishing buddies. I don't know if you have ever seen an eel be butchered and set up for cooking, but they look like a snake. They live in the water. They have fins, very, very fine fins, but you put them in a bucket and then you sprinkle some chewing tobacco on top of the water and it kills the eels. But what happens is that you use a knife and you cut a slit around their neck and then you pull off their skin like it was a banana peel. You just kind of strip it. And when I was five, was eye level to this happening. And then you take the eel and you cut it into lengths of probably 3 or 4 inches. And then if you're my father, you use his favorite condiment, which was something, I'm not even sure if they make it anymore, but it was called Saucy Susan. And it was sort of a Hawaiian label made it look like it was from Hawaii, but it was basically apricot jam and vinegar, I think. What I was not prepared for as a child was seeing this eel in every single stage between being alive and being on the grill continue to move. So the eel like looks after you peel the skin off, it continues to wiggle around like a snake. And then you cut it into little pieces and it continues to wiggle on the cutting board. And then you put it on the grill and it still continues to try to get off of the fire, even though it is in 3-inch lengths and quite dead with no head attached. And I'm sorry, I will starve to death before I eat any eel. And that's so that's one of my food hangups that I think I've earned and I am entitled to. But when I hear someone say that they're just on a low sodium diet, I wonder about the motivation. And it's, you know, it's especially pronounced with the gluten-free diet fad. I will go so far as to call it a fad because the people behind the original study that said there was a such thing as gluten sensitivity have since spent years researching their findings and in fact determined that there is not in fact something called gluten sensitivity. There is celiac disease, which is a real thing that a very small percentage of the population suffers from or lives with. And celiac disease crosses all race and class boundaries. There are wealthy people who have it. There are poor people who have it. There are people all over the world who have it. Gluten sensitivity is limited to the wealthier populations. Very few poor people will describe themselves as gluten sensitive. And to me, that food hang up, and this is, I'm not putting this on my yoga instructor at all. That's, I don't want that correlation to be drawn. But in general, I feel like we live in a society that is so privileged and we have everything we want at the click of a mouse that can be delivered to our doorstep by someone that's paid to just wait on our whims. We create gluten sensitivity for ourselves, even when the scientists have said, no, just kidding, that's not a thing that you can have. We continue to bankroll a $1 billion gluten-free industry because we need some turmoil in our lives. We need something to struggle with. And I think about this a lot because I wonder, what does that say about ease and like discomfort? Like, why are we so uncomfortable having access to things? I did a cooking event the other day and it was forgotten that something was forgotten to be ordered. And I can't remember. Let's say it was apple cider. Now, under normal conditions, I would have just made whatever it was work without apple cider. Let's say I had, you know, it was a vinegar, you know, some kind of dressing for a salad. And I could use anything. It doesn't have to be apple cider. I could use anything. But the person in charge who was doing all of the ordering hopped on Seamless and bing, bang, boom, we had apple cider delivered to the door, to the loading dock. And it was just like, it's incredible. And I guess part of it is that I don't live in an urban environment, so I don't have quite that much access to just click a mouse and things arrive at your door at the moment you want them. But that's not to say that there is room, I think, for creating illnesses that don't really exist in a world where there is plenty of hard life to go around. So if you are gluten sensitive, I would encourage you to just enjoy a baguette. It's okay. Like, it, I know it's, I would guess it is rooted in some guilt or some something. I haven't quite put my finger on it yet. I have access now to a broad swath of young people who I am doing a little investigating on what it is that makes one pursue making their life harder on purpose.
There's the placebo effect, you know?
There, it's true. And people do tell me, oh, well, you haven't seen my friend eat a bagel.
Right.
And it's like, well, if you're expecting that you're going to get ill, then of course.
Or somebody who stops eating gluten and says, you have no idea how much better I feel. I'm in a better mood. I feel light on my feet. You know.
Are you gluten sensitive, Jack?
No.
Well, in fact,
I had a question if we could before the break.
Sure.
about my bread.
Yeah. Do it.
So let's say I buy a delicious, fresh, baked the day of loaf of bread. What's the best way to store it if I'm not going to eat it all in that sitting?
Okay, what kind of bread are we talking?
Oh, well, this one was like a sourdough.
Okay. Any, if you had said baguette, I would say you have to eat it that day, or you cut it in half. And I guess actually it would, this method is probably good for everything, all types of bread. You can cut them in usable chunks. So like a baguette, I cut in thirds at home. I could eat the whole thing at once. I could eat an entire pint of Ben and Jerry's too. It doesn't mean that I should. So I cut it into thirds. If it's sourdough, if you have a toaster, cut it into the slices that you would toast, like put into the toaster. Sourdough, things that are hardier, like anything that's got raisins or nuts in it, put it directly into a freezer bag as slices, throw those in the freezer. And then when you want one, take it from frozen right into the toaster and toast it. And it'll be perfect. You can also quarter it if it's like a boule or back to the baguette. Wrap it well in saran wrap, plastic wrap. Is saran wrap, that's a brand, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Plastic wrap, plastico, as we call it in the restaurant industry. And then put your, whatever your size chunk is, so if it's like a quarter of a boule or a third of a baguette, into the freezer. And then when you want to refresh it, turn your oven on to like 450 degrees. Wait till it gets hot. Then take your bread out of the plastic, run it under some cold water just briefly to get the whole outside wet, and then put it into the oven. And what'll happen is that some steam will be generated and it'll re-crisp the crust of the bread. And I'll tell you, you can't tell. You'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference. That method works really, really, really well.
So leaving it in a basket on the table.
Not great.
Not the move.
Unless you want to make it into breadcrumbs.
Right.
After the break, we will have a casting director from MasterChef on.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA, designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
We're thrilled to announce a special event, the Silver Snail 25 Years of Slow Food. This event is hosted by Slow Food USA, Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's Pizza. It's been 25 years since Carlo Petrini and a group of activists launched a peaceful revolution to defend regional traditions, good food, gastronomic pleasure, and the slow pace of life. The slow food movement has since evolved into a comprehensive approach to food that recognizes strong connections between plate, planet, people, politics, and culture. Today, this movement involves thousands of projects and millions of people in more than 160 countries worldwide. Join us for a dialogue between Slow Food's founder, Carlo Petrini, and locavore activist Alice Waters as they reflect on the evolution of the food movement and all things slow. Friday, October 3rd from 11:30 to 2:30. You can go to our website and click on the link on the right-hand side of the page to RSVP. We can't wait to see you there.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Feels good to just talk for a little while about things that have been on my mind. It's like therapy, and I don't have to give anyone $150 at the end. So, let's see. Joining me on the line, we have a casting director from MasterChef, Erica. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on. I have been on a culinary competition show that airs on the Food Network, so I have been on a television set, and I love it. And I am happy to give you a platform to invite other people on board, because I find making television to be one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do. So tell us about MasterChef and what you need.
Well, thanks so much. Well, we are looking for the best amateur home cooks across the country. So we're not looking for the executive chef or the sous chef or someone that's already working in a kitchen. But, you know, we're looking for the teacher or the doctor or the truck driver that always had a passion for cooking but never kind of went in that direction in their life. So we're just looking for the average person that,
someone who's like, they make the best like potluck. You want to be at their potluck dinner, their Thanksgiving.
You know, they want like that person that everyone is always like, you know what, you should be a chef, or you should have had your own restaurant. And they just never went in that direction. And they always had a passion for food, but that's who we're looking for.
So let's say someone gets cast. What can they expect? Is it, where do you shoot? What's the time commitment? Can you tell us those things?
Well, we shoot in Los Angeles. It's probably, production is probably about, I think it's like 6 weeks, 6 to 9 weeks, give or take a few.
So this would be, if you got to do this, you would get to be in LA with other like-minded people and cook with them. I just think, like, when I did the show that I did, I had such an, it was just such an eye-opening event of how much goes into making TV. So I think a broad listener base that I have are people who wish that they had gone to culinary school. So you, you just might get some turnout. Where is the casting happening?
Well, all the information about all our casting calls are on our casting website. So if you're interested, or if you know someone that's interested, just go to MasterChefCasting.com, and there you can fill out one of our pre-registrations, and you can download an application, and you get all the information that you need, where to go, what to bring, what to say, what to do. All that stuff is on our website.
And do you have age limits on either side?
Well, you have to be 18 years of age and up. But we also have a MasterChef Junior show that might come back around. So if you're under 18, make sure to check back and see if we're coming back for Junior.
What's the oldest person that you've had compete? Do you know?
Wow. Well, Leslie, who is on this current season, was, I believe he is 56.
Okay.
And he might have been our oldest contestant to date.
Okay.
And he got really far. He was final three. So we definitely want all ages, young and old, everyone that just has a passion. We're just looking for that passion.
And what do you win?
Well, the prize for last season was $250,000 in a cookbook deal. So it's probably going to be something like that.
Oh, what I would do for a cookbook deal, I'll tell you. All right, so it's MasterChefCasting.com. I am looking at the faces of the three hosts. It's Gordon Ramsay, and tell me the other two.
Joe Bastianich and Graham Elliott.
So these people who get to be contestants on the show will be in excellent company. Does Gordon Ramsay yell at people?
No, actually, it's so funny. Everyone always asks me that. And, you know, our show is really about mentoring. You know, he understands that these are not professional chefs. You know, like in Hell's Kitchen, those are all executive chefs. Those are all people that make a living as chefs. So, you know, he's much easier on our contestants because he knows that these are not professional cooks.
Right. The professionals on Hell's Kitchen should know better some of the mistakes that they make.
Exactly. I mean, those people are trained chefs. They've gone to culinary school. You know, these are just regular folks like you and me with a passion for food. So he understands. It's more, you know, he's more in a mentoring position on our show.
All right, listeners.
I mean, not to say that he doesn't get angry, you know, but, you know, he's not like, you know, there's definitely a softer side of Gordon on our show, but, you know, he's firm.
Have you seen him in the new cell phone? Is it AT&T or Verizon? Where it's a really well done ad where the salesperson makes it so easy, and the punchline is he looks at her and he says, "This is usually where I get really angry."
Right. This is where I start to throw things, and she says, "I'm really scared right now."
Right.
But he's definitely there's you know, a softer side of Gordon on our show, and you know, he's just definitely more of a teacher.
All right, home cooks, you've heard it here, MasterChefCasting.com. I have several friends who, they know who they are. They may or may not be listening. They will probably listen to the podcast version of the show, but I hope that they turn out. You start with a lot of cooks, right, in the first rounds?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we usually start with 100, right. With 100 home cooks, and, you know, they make their cuts. And it goes to like 40, and then the top 18 or top 20. It just kind of varies from season to season.
And then you end up with a cookbook deal, which is one of the most difficult things to get in this world right now.
It's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing thing to get, for sure.
All right. Erica, thank you so much for coming on. I hope we get you some turnout. You'll be in New York City casting, and everyone should go to MasterChefCasting.com first and fill out the pre-screening information. If you are a listener and you happen to get cast on this, I would love for you to give me the heads up and let me know that you will be on. I will watch. In the next couple, let's see, October 3rd, I want to tell you that at Roberta's Pizza, if you are in the Bushwick area or can get to the Bushwick area, the Morgan Avenue stop on the L train, 20 minutes from Union Square, Carlo Petrini, who is the founder of Slow Food, and Alice Waters are going to be in the backyard on the lawn. You should bring a picnic blanket. You can order pizza and snacks from Roberta's new to-go operation, which is adjacent to Roberta's Pizza, where we broadcast from. They are going to be in a dialogue at a table, and everyone else can sit around and listen and eat pizza. It is free of charge. These are two icons of food history, contemporary food history, both in the eat local movement, in the school food movement, in the anti-food corporations. They will be here having just like a get-together of like-minded people. So if this is if Alice Waters or Carlo Petrini are people that you know their names, you may know Alice Waters is the executive chef behind Chez Panisse in California. If these are people that you are interested in breathing the same air in and listening to them speak about the topic on which they are most passionate, I highly, highly recommend making your way to Roberta's on October 3rd. Information and reservations are on heritageradionetwork.org. You have to RSVP, but like I said, it's free. This is the kind of thing that like the 92nd Street Y tickets would be like $90 to get into. So highly, highly recommend coming. I will be here. If you come, let me know that you're here. Let me know that you listen to Sharp and Hot. I want to say a huge thank you to Kraft Coffee. They are the official coffee sponsor of Heritage Radio and Sharp and Hot. You should know that I rely heavily on coffee, particularly in the mornings and at around 2:30 in the afternoon. It's awesome. I go out to my mailbox once a month. There is a little box in there, and there are hand-selected packs of coffee for me to taste from all over the world. The one that I loved this month the best was the Orin's Roasters. They are in New York. The coffee is incredible. It's dark, and it's rich. Go to their website, craftcoffee.com. Fill out a little survey about what kind of coffee you like, remembering that most people say they like dark, rich coffee when, in fact, only half the population does. Thank you to Malcolm Gladwell for that. Every time I say I like dark coffee, I have to remind myself that I'm certain that I am one of the people who does. Not everybody does. You'll get a sample sent to your mailbox. You can make these decisions. Use the code SHARP at checkout, and they will give you graciously 10% off of your order. Let's see. Is there anything else I need to tell you?
Well, Shout out to Landlady. I went and saw them at Brooklyn Night Bazaar.
That's right. You texted me. How was the show?
It was great. And they opened up with that same song they played on your show. Oops. My mic's cutting out here. But yeah, it was really, really good. He's got an incredible energy on stage. And I picked up the vinyl, and it's awesome. And I recommend listeners do the same.
Can we go out with that song?
Ooh. Yeah.
Can we make that happen?
Let me find that.
I love them. I love him. He is such an Adam. He's such an inspiration to me of just like, you do what you do, and I'll do what I do, and everybody just does what they do. And he's just such a cool, laid-back, awesome artist. If you haven't listened to that show, go back a couple of episodes. They play live in the studio during a thunderstorm that gets picked up by the mics. They play our mic stands and our water bottles, and they have a looping machine, and Adam sings this very song. Until next week, everybody, keep playing with fire and knives.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.